Hey everyone, thank you so much for taking time to listen to this week's sermon. It's our hope that this resource will grow you in your faith, hope, and love for Jesus. Please help us get the word out by following us on social media and sharing resources just like this. And if today's message has compelled you to take a next step in faith, please let us know by commenting on this post, sending us a personal message, or contacting us at the church office. Praying and believing that God will change you in a powerful way through his word. Blessings.
Well, I want to start today by talking about a pretty painful moment from my life. I've not talked about this moment very often from a public stage, so bear with me. But I want to talk to you guys about sixth grade basketball tryouts. Spoiler alert, I didn't make the team. Fifth grade basketball tryouts, I knew that there was no shot I was making it because those sixth grade boys were big. But this was the opportunity to get seen by the coach to show that I have a little bit of skill and then work hard over the next year to then finesse that skill. And so sure enough, sixth grade tryouts had come up. Now, when I went to elementary school at Lubeck Elementary School in Parkersburg, sixth grade was the last year of elementary school. And so, listen, sixth grade basketball was life. If you made the basketball team, you were king. Your social status immediately skyrocketed, and it set you up for hopefully a successful junior high career. And so this was a very big deal. And so I spent all year working on my basketball skills for the opportunity to make the team. It was a two-day tryout, and my first day was pretty good. I wasn't great, but I wasn't awful. I was right where I needed to be, right at the middle towards the bottom of the pack, because I knew where I fit on the pecking order, all right? I was, at best, last spot on the team, maybe second to last, all right? So day one was pretty great. Day two, not so much. It didn't go the way I wanted it to, and I could tell during the tryouts that it was going to be between me and another kid. His name was Sean Belcher. What a last name. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad last name. I'm just saying it's a different kind of last name. And so it goes down to the last play of drills, and I've got the ball, and I get stopped, and I can't move my feet anymore, and I'm outside the three-point line. I said, this is it. I could pass, or I could take the shot and prove that I deserve to be on this team. So I did. Took the shot with all the strength I had. Biggest air ball maybe you've ever seen in your life. What made the moment worse was Sean got the rebound, and then he went down and he made his shot. So in fifth grade, when they announced the team, the coaches did it live in front of all of the students, which was not horrible for your mental health. You're just sitting there with expectation, looking at these coaches' faces, and they're calling out the names, and when they don't call out your name, you walk out of the gym crying. So the coaches thought, let's be better in sixth grade. Let's announce the team over the PA on Monday morning for the whole school to hear. So here we are. I'm in my class with expectation, waiting to make this team, and I've got all the boys in my class, and there was not very many sixth grade classes at Lubeck back in the day, and I listened to it one by one, every single boy in my sixth grade class made the team, including Sean Belcher. But do you know who didn't make the team? Me. I didn't make the team. Come to find out, because my friend's dad was the coach. He said, Adam, it was close. It truly was between you and Sean. And you know what? It went down to that last shot, Adam, and Sean made it. I couldn't believe it. Not traumatizing at all. I did hang up the basketball cleats after that. Didn't try to go after it in middle school. But golly, I was so close. One shot away from making the basketball team. Who knows how my life could have changed if I could have just made sixth grade basketball. And I wish I could tell you that that feeling has left me as I have become an adult. But unfortunately, too many times, I have felt the sting of coming up one shot too short. Just not quite being there. You ever felt that? Feel that sometimes as a husband? Think about maybe I could just be a little bit better at leading my home, a little bit better at helping lead my wife. I think about that a lot as a dad. Maybe I could just be just a little bit stronger in my parenting, just a little bit more loving with trying to pursue the heart of my different children. I think about that as being a pastor and discipling and trying to help people grow in their faith. I think about that as a friend. I think about that just as somebody that nobody knows. the things I do when everybody's looking and the things I do when nobody's looking. And I think, man, I just feel more often than not that I'm just not there. I'm just one shot too short from really feeling like I belong. And it's these moments that remind me of some of the words that Peter speaks in his letter to the church. And really, this is the only verse we're going to be looking at on the screen today. And it's going to be from 1 Peter 1:13. And here's what it says. Peter's writing to the church, and he says, "Therefore, with minds that are alert and fully sober, set your hope on the grace to be brought to you when Jesus Christ is revealed at his coming. As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, be holy because I am holy." And I like the way that the Message paraphrases the last part of this. The Message version will paraphrase that verse 16 like this. "As obedient children, let yourselves be pulled into a way of life shaped by God's life. A life energetic and blazing with holiness. God said, I am holy. You be holy." I don't know about you, but I really want to be holy. I want that. I want to be the kind of person that God has called me to be. I want to be that husband. I want to be that dad. I want to be that pastor. I want to be that friend. I want to be the kind of person that when people see me, they know that I have been with Jesus. That I'm holy because he's holy. That I'm living the way that he has called me and set me to live in all the areas of my life. I want to be that person, but I got to be honest, most days I just feel like that sixth grade kid. So close to being there, but just barely missing out. And not quite feeling like I belong. So I struggle with the story in Matthew. I struggle with it. Jesus has sent his disciples out in this boat, and it's the middle of the night, and this storm has overtaken them, and these seasoned fishermen, they are losing their minds trying to keep this boat afloat. And in the middle of the chaos, Jesus is walking by them on the water. And so they cry out, "Jesus, is that you?" And Jesus says, "Yes." And then Peter gets out of the boat and he starts walking on the water towards Jesus. Now, I like to try to look at this from a perspective as if I've never read this text before. Because if you look at this as if you've never read it before, and maybe today you're in this room and you've never read this before, okay, because this is weird, all right, that Jesus is walking on water in the middle of a storm, and then all of a sudden Peter steps out on the water with him. And I got some questions. Like, the first question is, what does Peter think he's doing right now? Why does he think he can do what Jesus is doing? Why does he think he can walk on the water with Jesus? And why is he the only one doing it and the rest of them are in the boat? And I think in order for this story to make sense for us today, I think we're going to have to get some background. And so we're going to have to go back. And so here's what we know to be true. Jesus is a Jewish rabbi. And he has got a boat full of Jewish disciples. And this is a Jesus who is living in the first century in a very Jewish world. Now, here's what you need to understand about first century Jewish people. The first century Jewish people, they believed that God had spoken through a man named Moses. And this Moses has given the Jewish people the first five books of the Bible. Now, the Jewish people, they called this the Torah. Another translation is they called this the Way. This is everything for them. The Torah is the foundation to the Jewish community. It is the focus of their entire education system. A matter of fact, most Jewish boys and girls, by the time they hit 5 or 6, they would actually go to school. And they would learn the Torah from a local Torah teacher, a local rabbi, would teach these children from the age of 6 to the age of 10, the first 5 books of the Torah. And most children, this was the normal practice, most children, by the time they were 10 years old, would memorize the Torah by heart. Memorized. The first 5 books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, memorized by heart. Any of y'all ever try the Bible in a year reading plan? How's that going? Man, I get to Leviticus, and I'm like, John, let's just go, right? Like, it's just, it's hard, isn't it? It's a challenge, but they had it memorized by heart. Now, by the age of 11, most of these kids, they weren't in school anymore. They were learning the family trade. They were preparing to start a family. But the best of the best, well, they would continue their education. And so during this time, the best of the best, they would memorize the rest of the Old Testament text. Genesis to Malachi. Memorized. I got to be honest with y'all. Once cell phones came into play and we started storing numbers in them, I promise you this is true. I don't know my wife's phone number. I can't tell you how many times I have to ask her when I'm filling out pages. If I'm in an accident and my phone goes one way and I go the other, I'm in trouble, right? Because we're like, what's your emergency contact? I have no idea. Just dial wife. That's all I know. Like, that's the number. Like, Genesis through Malachi, memorized. And so then by the age of 14 to 15, most of those students would go in and completely commit to the family trade or would actually start to build a family. But at that point, the best of the best of the best, they would move on to the final level of education. And so during this time, what would happen is the best of the best of the best, those who have memorized Genesis to Malachi, those who know the Torah by heart, they love God, they love Torah, what they would do is they would petition to be a disciple of a rabbi. Now, here's what you need to understand when you hear the word disciple, because I think when we hear the word disciple, we think disciple means student, but it means so much more than student, because a student knows what their teacher knows. That's what a student is. But a disciple was so much more than that. A disciple didn't just know what their rabbi knew, but a disciple wanted to be like their rabbi in every sense of the word. They wanted to do what their rabbi did. Now, what was interesting about rabbis during this time in the first century is that each rabbi had a different interpretation of the Torah. So one rabbi would read a verse, maybe from Genesis or maybe from Psalm, and say, well, I think this is what the Torah is trying to say. But then another rabbi would go, no, I think this is actually what the Torah is trying to say. And what they would call that is that the rabbi's interpretation of the Torah was called the rabbi's yoke. It was their yoke. And so different rabbis had different interpretations. And so when you applied to be the disciple of a rabbi, like when you knew your Torah and you started to have an understanding of what you thought it meant, you would look at a rabbi and you would listen to them preach about the Torah and you would listen to their perspective. You would think, I think I agree with that rabbi. I think like that rabbi. And I'd like to do what that rabbi does. I would like to be like that rabbi. Then what you do is you would walk up to that rabbi and you would say, I would like to become your disciple. I would like to carry your yoke. Now that's a big ask. Because what you're saying is, I believe in you so much, I'm willing to dedicate my life to following you, to acting like you, to being like you. I want to take on your yoke. And so what would happen then is then the rabbi, if the rabbi felt that that was an acceptable candidate, it would start an interview process. And so then that rabbi would then begin to grill this student with questions about the Torah and questions about life and questions about philosophies. And then what would happen is this rabbi was trying to figure a couple things out. This rabbi wanted to know, can this kid do what I can do? Can this kid carry my yoke? Does he have what it takes to be me? And so he would ask these questions to try to get to these answers. And so then after a series of questions, if the rabbi concluded that this kid loves God and this kid loves Torah, but he's not the best of the best. He doesn't have what it takes to be me. Then this rabbi would lovingly look at this student and say, go and continue in the learning of your family trade. Kid, you're good, but you're just not good enough. But if the rabbi thinks that this kid's got it, like, I think this kid can do what I can do. I think he's the best of the best. And the rabbi would look at this kid, and here's what he would say. Come, follow me. And here's what's crazy. This 14, 15-year-old kid would leave everything behind. Their family, their synagogue, their village, and they would devote their entire lives to being like their rabbi. This is discipleship. This is what discipleship is. And so what would happen is you'd see this rabbi come to town during the first century, and this rabbi would come to town, and there was lots of different rabbis, and this rabbi would come to town, and he would have this group of disciples that were following him, like right up against him, doing everything that he did, following right behind him. And at the end of the day, if you were a disciple of a rabbi, you would be covered in the dust, in the dirt, in the mud of everything that your rabbi had stepped in and kicked up in. And so there was this saying that developed among the wise men. And here's what the saying was. May you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. May you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. And so when we meet Jesus in his adult life, he's starting his ministry as a rabbi. And we see him walking down the Sea of Galilee, and he comes across two fishermen who happen to be brothers, and their names are Peter and Andrew. And here's what we know to be true just based off the text. Here's what we know to be true. If Peter and Andrew are fishermen, they're not following a rabbi. They're in the family trade. And if they're not following a rabbi, that means at some point they were not the best of the best of the best. They weren't good enough. Maybe they were close, but they just weren't quite there. And so in Luke 5, Jesus interacts with these two brothers. And what we know from the context of the story is that they had been fishing all night, and these professional fishermen, they haven't caught anything. And it's the morning, and they're cleaning the nets, and they're probably getting ready to go back out again because this is their job. They have to have fish. And while they're cleaning their nets, probably preparing to go out after a long night of catching nothing, Jesus is being pressed in by a large crowd who is wanting to hear his teaching and wanting to see his miracles. And so Jesus, getting pressed against the shore, looks at Peter and says, hey, can I have your boat? And it was kind of probably one of those just polite invitations where he was going to do it anyway, but he was just trying to be polite because he's Jesus. And then he steps onto the boat and he starts preaching. And then at the end of the sermon, when the crowd starts to scatter, Jesus turns and he looks at Peter and Andrew. And he comes to discover that they've been fishing all night. They're exhausted, they're tired, they're frustrated. They haven't caught anything. And Jesus, the teacher, the rabbi, looks to Peter, the fisherman, and says, hey man, just throw it out into the deep water. And I just imagine how that conversation goes. If I'm Peter, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I'm frustrated, probably hangry. I'm like, oh, the deep water. Didn't think about that, Jesus. Let's throw it out into the deep water. How about you teach, I fish, and let's just keep it like that. But for whatever reason, there's a respect for this rabbi, Jesus, that Peter is willing to do whatever the rabbi says. And so he throws into the deep, and the Bible says that the nets instantly fill with fish, that it almost sinks their boat. They have to pull together another boat to be able to get the fish up. And then there's this moment that Peter has in Luke 5, verse 6. It says, when they had done this, they caught so many fish, their nets started to break. They called to their friends working to the other boat to come and help them. They came, and both boats were so full of fish that they began to sink. And when Simon Peter, the nobody, and I know that might sound harsh, but based off the context of the talk, we would have to assume that Simon was a nobody, not good enough to be a rabbi. And I can say that because of what happens next. In the midst of this miraculous moment, Simon Peter's reaction to Rabbi Jesus is this. When Simon Peter saw it, he got down at the feet of Jesus and he said, go away from me, Lord, because I am a sinful man. I am a nobody. I am a not good enough. And I don't deserve to be in your presence. Then Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you will fish for men. And when they came to land with their boats, they left everything and followed Jesus. Another gospel records Jesus saying this phrase, come, follow me. Now, Jesus, he would continue this invitation with 10 more men, and like Peter, they would leave everything to follow Jesus. And I think it's just so strange when you read this, right? Like, these are professional fishermen. This is what puts food literally on their tables, and this rabbi looks at Peter and says, come follow me. Peter didn't come to Jesus. Jesus came to Peter, come, follow me. And it says they left everything to follow this stranger. And it's weird if you don't have the context of what we just covered, that at this moment, rabbis are the most revered people of anywhere. Only the best of the best of the best get to be rabbis. I mean, I'm sure every Jewish mama, her dream was that her baby boy would grow up to maybe one day become a rabbi. And now Peter has been offered the chance. What is Jesus really saying to Peter? When he looks at him and he says, come follow me, what is he really saying? Do you know what he's saying to him? I think you can do what I can do. I think you can be like me. So then we go back to Matthew 14, right? And we got this boat full of nobodies. The storm is raging. Jesus is standing on the water. And Peter goes, if it's you, if it's actually you, Jesus, tell me to come out on that water and walk with you. And Jesus says, come. Why would Peter do this? Because he's a disciple of Jesus. And to be a disciple of Jesus means that Peter has oriented his whole life to believe that he can do whatever his rabbi can do. So if Jesus can walk on water, I can walk on water. So Peter gets out of the boat and he walks on water. How crazy is this? This is insane. Like, for the rest of his life, Peter is going to be defined by this moment. Like, I just wonder how many times did Peter interact with people and they go, who are you? Peter? Are you that Peter? Oh, man, what was it like walking on the water? Like, I just wonder, how many times did he tell the story? How many times did he talk about how he felt? And here's what I also wonder. I just wonder, how many times did Peter, after that day, sit on the bank of a shore and look out at the water and go, man, I walked on that. And I just wonder, maybe if he looked around, maybe looking, maybe one of these. Nah, not without Jesus, I can't do it. But I just wonder, like, everything changed that moment. He did what his rabbi could do. I gotta be honest. It's really hard for me to relate to this. I wanna walk on water. I wanna feel God do something in my life that just doesn't make any sense. I wanna have enough faith to step into the unknown and to do what Jesus does, because he's called me to. I want that kind of faith. But more often than not, I feel like what happens next. So Peter's on the water, he's with Jesus, and then we know that the storm was closing in, that he took his eyes off of Jesus, he focused on the storm that was around him, and that he sank. And he cries out, Jesus, save me. And Jesus reaches into the water and he pulls Peter out. And as he does, Jesus looks at him. And he says, why did you doubt? Peter, why did you doubt? You know, growing up as a church kid reading this, I remember when I first heard the story as a kid, I always assumed that Peter was doubting Jesus. But here's the problem. Jesus isn't the one who's sinking. Peter's sinking. Who does Peter doubt? There's part of me that feels like I think Peter's doubting himself. Can I actually do what Jesus does? Can I be like Jesus? Now, here's what we know. Jesus wouldn't have called Peter out of the boat if he didn't think
that Peter could do it, right? Because a rabbi doesn't choose you unless he believes you have what it takes to be just like him. And maybe one of the most beautiful realities of this particular moment in history, maybe it's hitting you for the first time like it hit me for the first time. It's not just amazing that you and I have the ability to believe in Jesus. How incredible is that? That the God of this universe allows us to believe in him, allows us to have a relationship with him, allows us to pursue him. But I think what's amazing when you look at this moment is not just that you and I have the ability to believe in Jesus, but that Jesus also believes in you. That Jesus believes in you. I mean, he's got to believe in us, right? When you look at what he left us to do when he left this earth. In John 15, Jesus says, you didn't choose me. I chose you, and I appointed you to go and produce what? Lasting fruit, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask for using my name. Because you didn't choose me, I chose you. I said, you come follow me. You do the things that I can do. I believe you can be just like me. And then in Matthew, before Jesus ascends to heaven, in verse 19, he says, go and what? Make disciples. Go, do this. Go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to what? To observe all that I have commanded you, all that I've shown you, all that I've taught you. And he says, and behold, I am with you always. It's the same call that he gave those men, those nobodies, those close but not quite there. It's the same call that he gave those men, a group of not good enoughs. And you know what's wild? They did it. They actually did it. They did exactly what their rabbi did. Which leaves me and you asking this question today. And here it is. What if we could actually be the kind of people that God created us to be? What if we could actually be the kind of people who lived like Jesus lived and did what Jesus did? And the power of the gospel is that Jesus believes that you can be just like him. He believes you can be just like him. So in John 14, verse 12, Jesus says, I tell you the truth. Anyone who believes in me will do the same works I have done and even greater works because I'm going to be with the Father. Like, wait, greater works than you, Jesus? That's what he says. That if you believe in me, you're going to do exactly what I did. Even greater things. If you believe in me, if you believe it. Paul tells us in Romans 8, verse 10, and Christ lives within you. So even though your body will die because of sin, the Spirit gives you life because you have been made right with God. Listen to verse 11. The Spirit of God who raised Jesus from the dead lives in you. And just as God raised Christ Jesus from the dead, he will give life to your mortal bodies by the same Spirit living within you. The same Spirit that raised Christ from the dead lives in you when you accept Christ in your life. And I love this verse because you know what this verse reminds me? It's not about me. Listen, Jesus didn't show up and pick me because I'm great. Y'all didn't make sixth grade basketball team, okay? And chances are you didn't either, okay? It's a metaphor for life. Some of y'all are like, I made sixth grade and I was the leading scorer. I know, it's a metaphor, okay? Listen, but chances are you're not making it either. That's the point of the gospel, is it's not about me, it's not about you, it's about him. He says, I chose you because of me, and I believe you can do what I can do. And it's not your strength, it's the Spirit that raised me from the dead is the same Spirit that's going to power you to live it out. You can be who I've called you to be. And then Paul goes into Galatians. He says, my old self has been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. No longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. So I live in this earthly body by trusting in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. It is not I, but Christ who lives in me. Because when Jesus looks at you and says, come follow me, what he's saying is, I think you can do what I can do. You can be like me. Now listen, man, those are some great verses to put on a coffee cup. I got to be honest with you, I ain't drinking out of that cup lately. And chances are you probably haven't been either. Man, that ain't what my coffee cup says. Man, that's not where my faith is. That's not where I feel like I am right now in my life. And maybe today you're here and you would say something to me. Maybe if it was just you and I having a cup of coffee, you might look at me in an honest moment and say, you know what, Adam? I just don't know how Jesus could ever believe in someone like me. Ever hear that lie at night? Ever hear that voice in your head driving in the car when it's just you? How could God use someone like you? How could God believe in somebody like you? And I love our guy Peter because Peter felt that too. Later on in John 21, we're gonna run into Peter again, and the same water walking Peter is found right where he started. See, less than a week after the resurrection, our boy Peter is sitting in an empty boat and he's full of doubt. Now, the weekend before, Jesus shared a meal with his disciples and he made a promise and he looked at him. He says, hey, they're going to take me and they're going to kill me, but don't worry, I'm coming back. And our boy Peter looks at Jesus and he goes, not over my dead body. I love Jesus' response. He goes, Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. I just wonder if Peter in that moment goes, well, did you say no? And sure enough, several hours later, sitting by a campfire, Peter will be asked about his faith in his rabbi. This man that he has left everything to follow. And he will deny ever knowing this man. On Sunday, the angels had a message for the women. They said, he's not here. He did exactly what he said he was going to do. He rose from the grave. Go tell the disciples and Peter. Oh, I love that. Because Jesus knew that on Sunday morning, Peter was sitting in his doubt and his pain, maybe thinking, man, I was so close. But I guess I've just always been who I thought I was. And when he needed me the most, I let him down. And so the angel says, and go tell Peter. And so then Jesus shows up and he has this moment with the disciples and it's amazing, but something's not right with Peter. It's as if Peter believes that Jesus came back for everybody, but maybe he just didn't come back for him. You ever feel like that? You ever read the Word of God and you think, man, these verses and these promises and these truths, they got to be for everybody in the room, but there's no way it could be for me. No way it could be for me. So less than a week after the resurrection, Peter's fishing. And he hasn't caught anything. So he's in a boat with John and some of the other men, and this man pops up on the shore and yells out, hey, you guys get any catch? Nothing. And the guy goes, why don't you throw the net on the other side of the boat? Sure. And it fills up. John goes, that's Jesus. And Peter doesn't wait for the boat to get to the shore. He jumps into the water and he swims to his rabbi. And then they have breakfast. And this breakfast is important. This breakfast, what's said at this breakfast is the entire point of my message to you this morning. If you get nothing else, I want you to get what Jesus asks Peter. Because maybe you're here today and you go, I just don't know if I could be like Jesus. I don't know if I could be that spouse. I don't know if I could be that parent. I don't know if I could be that coworker. I don't know if I could be that friend. I don't know if I could be that person. I don't know if I could be who Jesus wants me to be. What would it even take? What are the qualifications? And if you know anything about the story in John 21, Jesus has fixed breakfast for Peter, and he asks him one question, and he asks him three times. Now, let me tell you what he didn't ask Peter. This is not what he asked Peter. He didn't look at Peter in the face, and he goes, well, are you sorry? Are you sorry? He didn't ask him that. He didn't look him in the eye and he didn't go, hey, have you got all this stuff figured out? Because you're a little bit of a hot mess right now, bud. And I got a lot of things I got to get done, and I need you to be okay. Are you good? He didn't ask him that question. He doesn't even look and go, hey, do you think you can do this? He looks Peter in the face, and he goes, do you love me? Peter's like, I love you. They talk, and then later on, he looks at Peter again, and he goes, Peter, do you love me? Yes. Then he asks him a third time, Peter, do you love me? Oh, Jesus, you know I love you. And here's the thing that's great. Jesus did know that Peter loved him. But in that moment, you know what I think our guy Peter forgot? He forgot that he loved Jesus. He forgot that he could do the things that Jesus could do. That Jesus never would have called him if he didn't believe he could do it. And after every question, he looked at Peter and he says, all right, feed my sheep. Friend, that is the qualification to being like the rabbi. Do you love him? Not do you have your life put together. Not do you have the first 5 books of your Bible memorized, or whether or not you've been faithful in your plan. The foundation of our relationship, the foundation of our faith, is your ability to answer that question. Do you love him? Yes. Then feed his sheep. Be willing to reorient your entire life to follow this man named Jesus. And I close with the words that our guy Peter spoke years and years later. As obedient children, let yourselves be pulled into a way of life shaped by God's life, a life energetic and blazing with holiness. God said, I am holy, you be holy. I'm holy, you be holy. I'm good, you can be good. I'm faithful, you can be faithful. I'm consistent, you can be consistent. I know what it's like to be a good father. You can be a good parent. I know what it's like to love the church as my bride. You can be a good spouse. I know what it's like to be who God has called me to be. And I promise you, church, I promise you, you're going to walk out of here and there is going to be an enemy that's going to get inside your head and lie to you and look at you and go, you could never be that for him. Look at where you've been. Look at what you've gone through. Who told you you could live your life like that? And I'm thankful for these words that Peter speaks in his letter to the church. He says, be holy because I'm holy. Who told you you could be like that? He did. And if my rabbi believes that I could be like him, then I can be like him.
Thank you so much for taking time to listen to this week's sermon. It's our hope that this resource will grow you in your faith, hope, and love for Jesus. Please help us get the word out by following us on social media and sharing resources just like this. And if today's message has compelled you to take a next step in faith, please let us know by commenting on this post, sending us a direct message, or contacting us at the church office. We are praying and believing that God will change you in a powerful way this week through his word. Blessings.